Welcome to Alternate Reality, episode 390, reviews and more. Yes. What did she say? What you say? That you only meant well, cause you did. What you say? Jason Derulo. That it's all for the best, cause it is. I was so wrong, wrong, for so long.
Alternate Reality is a podcast about comics, comic-related media, and comic-related merchandise. We do reviews of all sorts, TV, video games, movies, and comic issues. So be warned, the following show material contains spoilers. If you have not read your books, seen the movies, played the games, so forth and so on, then you may want to stop the show until you have done so, or you can proceed at your own caution. You have been warned. So tell me, girl, what you say.
Hello and welcome to Alternate Reality, the comic book podcast. My name is John.
I'm Charlie.
And we are back to talk to you about all the things going on in the world of comic books. We took a little break last week. It was Father's Day weekend.
Yeah, that's your excuse.
That's my excuse. It was Father's Day weekend. And then leading into that Monday, I was tired. I'd had a lot of festivities over the weekend with my family. Didn't really feel like putting together a show. I apologize. Blame me. I tried to lay some of it off on Charlie for being gone to Heroes, but no, Charlie can't, you know, do me a solid and let on like he was part of the problem too. No, Charlie's like, I was ready to do a show.
I was.
So fine, it was all me. I admit it. So we hope that you guys are not suffering too much from being without your weekly dose of Alternate Reality, but we're back.
Do y'all have any black tar heroin? Do y'all have any Alternate Reality?
Y'all got any more of that Alternate Reality? So if you're chasing the dragon that is Alternate Reality, then we
the heron,
the China cat.
that episode of Luke Cage, she goes, yeah, I'm trying to get into China White business. That guy's like, they don't call it China White.
Nobody's called it China White in years. And that made me think of that issue of Arsenal.
That's why I always bring up the heron.
Of the heron. So, yeah, we apologize we were gone last week, but we're back, and we're going to talk about comics this week. And I was in favor of doing a longer show to make up for the two-week absence, but no, Charlie didn't want to do it. So before we start, Charlie, you were at the Heroes Con last week. You had a good time, I assume.
Yes.
And so you see
for I will provide inference to it later on in the show.
Oh, so you're going to talk about that.
Aha!
Aha, you didn't tell me that. See, you're supposed to prep with me before we start the show.
Who's the producer here?
Well, as the host with the most, I need to know these things. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back, and we're going to start talking about Skyward number 3. Alternate Reality providing broadcast excellence each week, except when we decide to not be here. Alternate Reality, the comic book podcast. We're talking to you about comics this week, the things that came out that we read. Charlie, you want to talk to us about Skyward number 3.
Yes.
Go for it.
Skyward number 3 is an Image book. It's written by Mr. Joe Henderson. The art is done by Lee Garrett. Antonio Fabella is the colorist. Simon Bolin is the letterer. And Rick Lopez Jr. is the editor. Now, I picked this book for one reason.
And that reason being?
A few weeks ago, I'm watching my TV shows. And they're all coming up to their season endings, right?
Right.
And lo and behold, one of my favorite TV shows was getting axed by its network.
Oh my God, no.
Lucifer. And I was like, what? Lucifer's a great show. It's funny. It's like a procedural crime thing, mm-hmm. but it's really funny. And they deal with like the main character of the show is Lucifer, Satan himself.
The Satan.
Well, the thing is, there is these two guys who run and write the show. The guy who the creators of the show, the one guy's name is Ildri something or other. I don't want to screw his name up. It's like Metrovich or Mutrovich.
Watch your mouth.
And the other guy's name is Joe Henderson. Joe Henderson is the writer.
Right.
Well, this book came out, Skyward Number One, and I was like, that's weird. And I saw the guy posting, and I was like, oh, he writes the book. Okay. So it's kind of cool watching a TV show where the writer of the show is the actual writer of a comic book, whereas usually it's the other way around, where comic book writers go and write TV shows,
right,
like Jeff Johns and Mark Guggenheim.
David Lindelof.
Damon Lindelof, yeah, all those. Well, the interesting thing about this book, Skyward, is it's a book where Earth's gravity just stops working one day.
So it's just one day everybody gets up and...
Yeah, gravity just does not work.
To clarify, because I saw a preview for this, but I didn't read it.
Yeah.
So are we talking about like reduced gravity or no gravity?
I'm gonna say no gravity, because
if there's no gravity, we're talking about astronauts in space floating.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So because I was under the impression
it's not a lower gravity.
Right.
Because
where anything, you just can do like long jumps or something. No.
Anything that was not permanently stuck in the ground,
nailed down,
has
lifted
has
off.
Has exited.
Okay.
And
oh wait, so we're talking about have floated off and is gone?
Yes, is gone.
Into the atmosphere and out into space.
Yes. So gravity on Earth is no more.
Okay.
So the thing is, there's this girl and she's a...
So I imagine millions of people died.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'll get to that.
Okay, sorry. I'm sorry.
This girl, her name is Willa, and Willa's father knew that this was coming.
Oh, Jor-El. Okay.
No. And her father's business partner at the time, they were working to try and stop it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out her father's business partner is evil.
Well, naturally.
And he's made all this money because he was working, where Willa's father was working against the anti-gravity thing, trying to find
a way
to stop it and get Earth's gravity back. This guy was making profit off of it and really didn't want it to stop.
Right. Greedy capitalist.
Well, the funny thing is, it's now, unlike our social structure now where, rich people are in mansions and big skyscrapers like that.
Mm-hmm.
All the rich people are on the ground. Which is kind of funny because all the poor people live
in a stratosphere.
In the air, right?
Okay.
And to show you a point, the rich people, they have magnets on their shoes.
Oh, okay.
So they've replaced all the flooring and all their buildings with metal and they've got magnetized shoes.
Okay.
And it's great. Well, she just realizes that her father had known this extremely rich guy and that they were business partner, right? So she confronts him in this issue. And she's like, yeah, my dad was trying to stop this. And I don't know why you two stopped talking, but he got really weird when my mom died.
Right.
And her mom died the day the gravity exited. Because her father went out to try and save her, but she floated away while he was incapable of reaching her.
Okay.
Now, in this future, they're she's a delivery person, and she's got to go around on jetpacks, which is kind of cool because I was thinking that would be the way that jetpacks would probably be made into existence.
Right.
Just not now because... Well, it's really stupid and expensive, but if there's no gravity in the Earth,
then they'd be relatively easy.
Yeah, you'd make them just so you can get around.
You wouldn't take that much thrust to move around. Yeah, okay.
Well, she confronts this guy, And they kind of, he's like, oh, yeah, I'd like to talk to your dad. Where's he now? Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, you know, he's kind of crazy.
He's a little crazy.
And, you know, we can set up a meeting and I can give you the information. And he's like, why don't you just tell me now? Because what he wants to do is kill him.
Right.
Obviously. Because obviously he's making money off this.
Occupy Wall Street.
Well, she, I'm sorry. Well, the fact is, like, he's talking to her and they're in one of his buildings, right?
Right.
And she's wearing the magnetized shoes. She's not really floating around. Well, apparently this guy, seeing as he made this technology, can totally lock you down on your magnetic shoes to where you can't even move your feet. So he does this to her, and they're fighting. Like, she's like punching him, and like they're having a real like brawl. And at some point, one of his guards runs up and uses a taser on her. Mm-hmm. But when he does that, the magnetic shoe stop working, and she floats away. Well, the main brunt of the issue is like she knows a friend who works in the building, and she uses her to escape.
Right.
And she finds out that like one of the guy she works with is really rich, but like he works in like a lower tier job and he's handicapped. And she's like, well, why would he never say that he was rich? And I guess she doesn't realize that he wanted to hide the fact that he was handicapped. Mm-hmm. Maybe because he was ashamed of it or ashamed of his family. So with no gravity, he can move around quite more easily than he could on Earth in a magnetized wheelchair or whatever.
Right.
Well, at the end of the issue, she goes home. She finally gets out of the house. She finally gets to go back to her house, and she sees that the apartment where her father lives is broken in. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh my God, I'm too late.
Right.
And that's where the issue ends.
Cliffhanger.
So it's like, it's a really good book. And I probably wouldn't have even started it.
Right.
If I hadn't known Lucifer was being canceled. But seeing as I did, I get to read a cool book.
Oh, okay, cool. I'm glad you like it. All right. And Chris Parton agrees with you. He says Skyward is a very good book. I picked up Plastic Man #1.
So you want to bleep that out?
Art too. but we'll give Parton a little promotion. I picked up Plastic Man #1, which was odd for me because Plastic Man's never been one of my core characters that I cared a lot about.
Before, he's always been one of my favorites because like I remember the cartoon in the 80s.
Right.
Where it's like him and his girlfriend and the Hawaiian dude.
See, I never watched that.
Really?
I don't know. I just missed it somewhere along the line. The only thing I really remember Plastic Man from very much was like, maybe he was on a few episodes of the Super Friends, maybe. And then Justice League Unlimited, he was in that for an episode or two here and there. But
squeaky wheel, my friend.
And then he was in the Morrison JLA for a few, you know, for a story arc or two.
Yeah, he famously was Wonder Woman's dress. And
right. Wonder Woman had on a dress. And
it was Big Barda. I can't remember which
one. One of the two.
But she was like choking him out.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing was when Morrison did it, it's like he could morph into anything.
Right.
So he could be like a raft, I think, in one episode it was.
You know, the thing I was going to comment. Yeah. The thing I was going to comment on this is that it seems like he's got amazing control of his power in this. Because in the beginning of this, he's hooking back up with the people that thought they had killed him before he got turned into Plastic Man.
Yeah, he's going back to his former identity.
Right.
Of Eel O'Brien.
And they don't think this guy's a rat, maybe. It's just you don't come back from the dead, you know, like that. Just
yeah, right, Johnny, you're right.
Yeah, you know, you don't just come back from the dead like that. Maybe he was playing dead, maybe the cops had him planted or something like that. They're not taking any chances. They're gonna kill him again. And so they, you know, they beat him with a baseball bat, and then they do all kinds of horrible things to him, and he's
laying. I can imagine, though, like, would he still suffer some of the injuries?
No. If you're Plastic Man, I don't think you feel any of that. But he obviously does a good job faking it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It seemed to me like he was pretty rough.
Well, I was going
to
say, he's bleeding.
Yeah.
He's bleeding down his face, now his nose, and around his mouth.
I don't know how you could easily fake that.
And at the end of it, he's laying in a pool of his own blood. Then this kid walks up, and after the guys leave, he pulls himself together. And I was like, oh my God, Plastic Man has way more control over his body than I realized he did if he can fake injuries and have blood coming from himself. And then pull that all back together. I was like, that's amazing. I didn't know he could do that. Because I just thought he was like, you know, whether it's this guy, Elongated Man, or Mr. Fantastic, or whoever, you get the feeling like their body doesn't really have any real flesh and bone substance anymore. Like, it's just a rubbery goo that they can hold into place to look human.
Yeah.
But apparently, that's not the case. Or if it is, he's got such control over it that he can mimic blood. And so that's really, really cool. So I thought that was really amazing. This is written by Gail Simone, who's a fantastic writer for the most part. I'm not a huge fan of her work, but I've never really read anything by her that I thought was horrible either. The only thing that Gail Simone ever really disappointed me on is when she brought Batgirl back in the New 52, and it was Oracle, and they redid it, and it was Barbara Gordon back as Batgirl. And I always thought that was a mistake, but I don't think that was Gail's fault. I think that was editorial's fault.
Yeah, they were probably just like, yeah, we're bringing Batgirl back.
Yeah, so I don't blame her for that. And so she famously wrote a bunch of Red Sonja comics over Dynamite.
Read that Red Sonja Tarzan book that you reviewed.
Well, now that thing's a little weird. I think she's phoning that one in for a payday or something. That's not great.
Either way.
But she's a fantastic writer for the most part, and I've always enjoyed her work.
You can bat one.
Hey, yeah. J.K. Woodward's on the show. Is on the... Thing. Hey, JK. How you doing, man?
Facebook Live.
I popped into his Facebook live stream the other night, and he was talking about Star Trek stuff, and I couldn't stay long, but he acknowledged I was there, so that was really cool. Thank you, JK. So Gail Simone's writing this. The artist on this is an Adriana Milo. I don't know her, but she's a very, very good artist. She draws ladies really, really attractive.
How is this spelled? Are you sure it's a woman? That's what I'm saying.
Well, it's Adriana. Adriana is how I pronounce that.
And what's the last name?
Milo. M-E-L-O. I don't know how you could. I don't know how that could be a man's name. Adriana. That's still a man. No, that's got to be a girl.
I'm just wondering.
Okay. So anyway, but the artwork kind of reminds me a little bit of like Terry Dodson. You know, it's. It's kind of in that vein. It's really pretty. But the artwork is kind of cartoony and fun. And this book, it's kind of got a gritty crime noir feel to it.
It is she.
Okay, good deal. And so this book's kind of got a crime noir feel to it. And it reminds me a whole lot of The Spirit that was coming out.
Yeah, it kind of felt like that.
Especially the run that
Darwin
Cook was doing. And so I really enjoyed this. This is just a 6-issue mini, but I thought this was a lot of fun. It's got a lot of comedy in it. He's laying there in a pool of his own blood, and this kid walks up and he goes, "Hi, I'm Pedro." He says, "Suave Pedro Scocktoon, Prince of Pine Street," and he goes, "Three guys on one. That's just Wang. See you around, Eel O'Brien." He walks off, and he goes, "Is Wang good or bad? Does it still mean penis?" And so he works in the Wang reference two or three more times in the issue.
He's like, "That's just Wang."
Because he thinks it's the cool new hip term. And he looks at this girl later in the episode, later in the issue, and he goes, "You are so full of Wang." And she looks at him like it still means penis, you know. So I'm not even really going to get a whole lot into what happened. It's really cool. That he goes to a gentleman's club where all the girls are dressed up like the DC Bombshell girls. That's kind of interesting, and I thought that was cool. But the gist of it is, at the end of it, this girl comes to him and she tells him that there are evil people infiltrating the most powerful super teams on the planet, the JLA, the Teen Titans, and all these people, and she needs him to go in and figure out who it is. And he goes to one of his friends and finds his friend murdered, and in blood he's written JLA on the door. So that's kind of where it ends. It's setting up kind of a murder mystery thing. And is someone in the Justice League responsible? And Eel O'Brien, Plastic Man, is going to have to figure out who it is. This book was a lot of fun. It was comedic. The artwork's cool to look at. It feels like The Spirit with Plastic Man playing Danny Colt It was really, really cool. I liked it.
Awesome.
All right, Charlie, you want to talk about Aquaman number 37?
I wanted to bring up Aquaman because I don't think a lot of people are reading it. I don't think a lot of people, like, care about it or whatever.
Yeah, Aquaman's always had that problem.
And the thing is, Dan Abnett's writing it. The artist for this issue is Ricardo Federici. The colorist is Sonny Go. Letterer Steve Wands. And the thing is, I think the way Dan Abnett is writing it is like Game of Thrones.
Okay.
Except, you know, we're not getting any of the nudie stuff, you know, or yeah. stuff like that.
Yeah. No, the cooch flashes or nothing like that.
Well.
Well, I mean, seriously, first season, that stuff was very prevalent. My understanding is they've slacked off on that in recent years.
But I think it's really like, it's really kind of Game of Thrones, like, where, like, Aquaman was deposed from his throne, and this character named Khorram Wrath has taken over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is, Khorram Wrath has been infected by what they call the darkness, I think. And he becomes...
That's an image property,
I think. He becomes a monster. Like, I mean, he becomes a full-grown monster.
Oh,
yeah. Where he used to look human-like.
Right.
And while you got that going on, and where Aquaman is deposed, he has went to, like, the slums, and everyone thought he was dead or whatever. Because he had this big, huge fight with Ocean Master once upon a time.
So does Atlantis have slums?
Yes, they do.
Okay, that's cool. All right.
So, like I said, it's very Game of Thrones, where, like, he's thrown in with, like, the peasants and stuff. Right. Like, the
nobodies.
The more non-human-looking people, because...
The rejects.
In this... In Atlantis, if you're not... If you don't look human, you're lower than right. everyone else. And there was a rebellion, and King Shark was there. And King Shark was helping with the rebellion, which is kind of funny, because you...
He's historically a bad guy.
Yeah, because he's usually a bad guy. And he met Dolphin, who has this weird power where, like, she can turn invisible, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, all this is going on, he's had to fight to prove that he was who he was. Because, like I said, everyone thought he was dead.
Right.
And Mira is actually now the queen of Atlantis, even though she's... a part of another group called the Zebels, which is X-E-B-E-L.
Mm-hmm.
Because when
her... The Zebels.
When her and...
Like Zsa Zsa Gabor leading a resistance. We are the Zebels!
Where her and Aquaman are going to get married, she will be Queen of Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, she's in her own book doing... In her own miniseries,
right.
trying to get her people to come along. But that's beside the point. Dan Abnett's writing that, too. A lot of good books that Dan Abnett's writing. He's writing a lot of DC books that are really good.
And doesn't get a lot of
this and credit. Titans and...
Well, the same thing was true at Marvel. You remember he was writing all that outer space stuff.
Yeah.
Nobody was reading it.
Abnett and Lanning. Yeah. Until they started making movies, and then everyone's like,
oh yeah, I knew that stuff. These guys. I was on that back in the day.
But in this issue, what I was going to say is, while all this stuff is going on, Volko, who is also going to be in the Aquaman movie coming up soon,
mm-hmm.
he's in it, and he's been trying to go and ask the ancient dead people of Atlantis, who are all ghosts, like, they're all, like scholars and whatnot, but, like, they're all ghosts, and he's trying to ask them for help. And it's kind of funny, because, like, the way they die, they come back and, like, they actually come back as ghosts like that. Like, the one guy he's talking to,
right.
I think his name is Null, has half of his face torn off.
Yeah. Ew.
But the guy can still talk. And, like, in some of the earlier issues that they've tried to talk to other, like, ancients of Atlantis for help. But, like, sometimes when they get too old, they just fade away and disappear. So in this issue, they have a fight with them because Noel's like, yeah, we can't help you. We can't explain why. And then Aquaman's fighting Corum Rathanis, and he actually has to get help from the Sisterhood, who are like the high priestesses of Atlantis.
Right.
They're the ones who've been like having problems with him marrying Mara because she's a Zabellion. They're like a warring faction.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually needs help from them, and they like use a spell to where he can like actually fight Corum. And it all comes to a head in this issue. It's really good.
Okay, cool. Excellent. So Dan Abnett doesn't get the credit he deserves. That's what we've learned.
I don't think he does on this book. I think people are more in tune with Titans,
mm-hmm.
but I don't usually hear people talk about Aquaman. So,
and who knew the classism existed in Atlantis? Not me, that's for sure. Because you do kind of get this sense that whenever Atlantis shows up in another property, whether it's Justice League or whether it's on one of the cartoon series or whatever,
they're always more proper.
Right. They're always like, we are superior and you humans are savages. And so to find out that they got their own problems, that's kind of cool. It's not just us. It's imperfect. All right. Doctor Strange number two. So Doctor Strange, I like Doctor Strange anyway. Doctor Strange has always been one of those characters that I've kind of had a fascination with, even though I don't have a lot of history with. I've always thought that whenever he showed up in some other event that was going on in the Marvel Universe, I was like, oh, it's cool, Doctor Strange. You know, but I never really read a lot of Doctor Strange stuff. And then I remember when Brian K. Vaughan brought The Oath out. I was like...
I think we brought this up at Heroes Con.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I think so.
I was like,
here's The Oath, you know, that book, the one Doctor Strange book, John White.
I love that book. And so that kind of got me on a Doctor Strange kick. I've even got a Doctor Strange statue over here. And so I've decided to try and start reading more Doctor Strange stuff. And then Jason Aaron was on Doctor Strange for a while, and I love Jason Aaron as a writer. So I was reading some of that stuff. But now he's off the book. And so the question was in my mind was, well, without Jason Aaron, do I continue with Doctor Strange or do I let it go until somebody else that I like writing comes back on it? Well, this is Mark Waid. Well, Mark Waid's no slouch when it comes to comic book writing, although you can say the arguments have been made that some of Mark Waid's best writing is behind him and that he just really doesn't have it anymore. I don't know. I've heard those arguments, but... the man's got some chops.
Either way, this is your review on that book,
not those other things. And so I decided to go ahead and give the new Doctor Strange series a chance, see what it was about. And so far, this has been really good. I've enjoyed it. The premise of this is that while in the Jason Aaron run, Doctor Strange had a problem because all the magic was disappearing because these other creatures from this other world were invading and destroying magic. And so all magic everywhere was gone from the world for a while. By the end of that thing, and that was all resolved, magic had returned to the Earth, and people who were magic users suddenly had access to magical powers again. With the exception of Doctor Strange. And Doctor Strange suddenly finds himself alienated from the power field, and he can't access it. Kind of like the Flash, who can't run fast anymore.
Yeah.
And other Flashes can, but he can't. It's like he's lost access to the powers. To the powers. I don't want to sound too countrified.
To the pairs.
Sorry, my hillbilly accent comes out from time to time.
What pairs? No, not pairs. Powers.
And so he can't figure. He's exhausted every resource he can to try and figure out how to gain access to his power back. Nothing works. He can't even cast the simplest of spells. So he doesn't know what to do. He's about ready to give up. And what's Doctor Strange to do? He can't go back to being a doctor because his hand's still messed up. He can't be the Sorcerer Supreme because he's got no access to magic. I mean, he's going to end up being a bum on the street at this rate. So eventually he goes to see Tony Stark, which I'm not sure why you would seek Tony Stark. But his reasoning was...
I would probably go to Doctor Doom, seeing as Doctor Doom has done both.
Right.
Aha!
I can see your logic, but that's not what happens. So he goes to Tony Stark because...
I'm smarter than Doctor Strange.
It could be. Because for whatever reason, he said Tony Stark has hit rock bottom a number of times and has always managed to claw his way back up. Maybe he's got some advice for me on how to recreate myself and pull myself back together from nothing. Because that's about where he feels like he's at this point. Okay, so he goes to see Tony Stark. Well, Tony Stark goes, sounds like a burnout problem to me. And Tony was, and so.
Sounds like you're a big drunk, buddy.
You need to lay off the bottle. I'll tell you what your problem is. No, Tony, that was your problem.
For like two issues.
And so he says, sounds like burnout. And he says, no, I've not exhausted all the magical resources that I have. He said, that's not what I mean by burnout. He said, I'm talking about psychological. He said, it could be that you have just worked so hard at restoring all the magical energy to the world and doing all that you do defending the planet that you're mentally exhausted from it and you're psychologically resistant to it at this point without even realizing it. And Tony, and so Steven's like, well, that doesn't feel right, but I guess it's possible. He says, you know what you need? A trip to the stars. He goes, what are you talking about? Well, if you have trouble accessing magic on Earth, there are other planets out there that must have their own magic. Maybe you could access magic out there. I'm going to give you a small one-man spacecraft. And I've got a preset destination in here that'll take you on a round trip around the galaxy to visit various different planets where I know that they have magic users. And perhaps you can seek out the sage wisdom of those races to find your powers or to find access to powers that maybe you didn't previously have or whatever. And maybe you can build from that and get yourself back to where you were. Well, Steven's like, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard. And initially starts to walk away, but he decides, well, what the frick else have I got to lose? So Tony gives him a universal translator. He implants it behind his ear and sends him on his way. He is in space like a handful of days, maybe a week or two, and a comet knocks him off course and he crash lands. And crash lands on this planet where these like evil alien race of people have imprisoned him and are torturing him. And they're scientists. They don't have any word for magic. So whenever he tries to talk about magic, the universal translator can't find a word for it.
I think he said butt. I hear those people like say that word a lot.
So they're holding him down and they're experimenting on him, trying to learn his physiology and stuff, putting him through the most awful things. Long story short, while he's there...
Here's the uncut version of the Justice League movie.
Oh, and all the torture. And so he gets...
Here's the Zack Snyder cut.
He gets put in prison with this female alien, who, although she's not all that cute...
She looks like one of that Mass Effect alien.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Well, I didn't find her to be that cute for whatever reason. He clearly is somewhat attracted to her. And they don't say it, but you can just tell he's intrigued by her, right? And so
this is not Iman we're talking about.
She's like, we're going to get out of here, but not before I steal some mystical artifact that I know they keep here. And he goes, well, I thought they didn't have magic on this planet. She goes, yeah, they don't know what it is. She said, but I know what it is, and we're going to steal it. Well, when she describes it to him, he realizes what it is. It's like the Eye of Bosphorus or something like that. And it's apparently will one-time grant basically any wish. So Steven goes, I just need to get a hold of this thing and wish for my powers back, and I can go home. All right, so as they're trying to escape, they hear these guys talking about trying to hunt down the humans. We must find them. We don't want them to escape before we invade their planet. Steven overhears this. And he goes, oh, my God, they're headed for Earth. This is all my fault. I've got to do something. She's like, we've got to get out of here. He goes, I've got to stop this. No, we got to leave or we're going to die. So she manages to get the giant gem crystal thing that she's looking for. They get in the spaceship and they're starting to fly off. They're being chased. He's sitting in the back cockpit with this crystal and he's doing his incantation, his chant thing, and nothing's happening. He's like, frick, you know, my powers still don't work even now. And then something happens, and he gets a flash of insight. And he goes and he opens the bay doors, and she's in the upper atmosphere. And he jumps out, and he starts doing them incantations at that point, and the magic is released. And with his one wish, he wishes for an envelope to envelop the planet so that they can't ever leave.
An envelope to envelop the planet?
Yes, that's what I said. Isn't that what I said?
An envelope.
Yeah, it's technically, it's not like a paper envelope. Anyway, this force field to wrap around you. The planet.
That's better.
It's a mystical envelope. Anyway.
Nope.
This mystic force field wraps around the planet. I'm sure everybody listening to me knew exactly what I meant.
An envelope. Mm-hmm.
And so, and then basically...
Because if I say the word envelope, I mean force field.
And so his wish was basically that they would never be able to leave that planet. So they're stuck there for all time as long as this magic holds. And she was like, you've wasted the crystal on a stupid wish. And he goes, no, I had to make sure that the Earth was safe. But it gives him renewed hope that there is magic out there. And so these two are going to continue to travel together to find other magical sources.
And everyone then marvels in space.
And the next issue is him fighting the Super Skrull. So I was like, oh my God, you know what this is going to be? This is going to be Doctor Strange gallivanting through space, meeting up against various cosmic entities, and fighting them and stuff.
Damn it, Jim, I'm a magician, not a doctor. Wait.
Yeah, so this could be really fun. Just depends on how it goes. So, Mark Waid, I'm hoping that you will...
I would say in about 6 issues, it would be back on Earth.
You think so? Well, possible. So, Mark Waid, I'm hoping that you make me a happy man.
Is he going to get down on one knee?
That wouldn't make me a happy man at all. Writing a good story would make me a happy man. The art in this, I don't even know who did it. It's passable. It's not fantastic. Let me see.
Well, I was about to say, some of those panels look like Tony Stark.
Yeah, well, you know what?
I mean, those close-up panels.
Strange and Stark do look similar from certain perspectives. Because they got the same basic facial hair going on. Let me see if I can find out who
they are. White men with goatees. What's up, Marvel?
Well, there is that one issue where Tony looks at Steven and goes, what's up, my facial hair brother? Or something like that. I forget what issue that was in. Jesus. Jesus Sanz is the artist on this.
I was going to say Jesus what?
As I started saying Jesus says. Jesus says you should...
Jesus says.
Yeah.
Or however you say his last name.
All right, Charlie. Justice League number 2.
I kind of love this book. And I wanted to bring this issue up against the Avengers book. For one reason only.
Right.
Batman.
Okay.
So what's going on is... I can't think of his name. John Stewart.
Oh, yes.
Is taking this prisoner in space, like, to a holding pen somewhere. And all of a sudden, he has this plant in his spaceship for some reason.
Right, just to kind of remind him of home or something like that.
And Swamp Thing suddenly appears.
Yeah.
And John Stewart's like, what the crap? Because you're in the middle of deep space.
It's not the place you look for Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing shouldn't be there.
Right.
And it turns out that Swamp Thing is being a go-to...
A conduit.
A conduit between...
Thank you. See, I have the best words.
They're big league. But he's being a conduit for Batman.
Right.
So Batman starts speaking, which is kind of funny because it's Swamp Thing, and it turns into Batman.
Right.
And I'm like, how does that work, really?
Well, I mean, Swamp Thing can manipulate
Does he go over Batman and envelop him so he's like a Swamp Thing shield over Batman?
No, I think Swamp Thing's just taking the form of Batman to convey the
message.
Or does
Batman have, like, his ear and... You know? It's like, I don't understand how that works. But it works, yeah. You know? And it's funny because, like, John Stewart starts freaking out. He's like, hey, what's going on here? You shouldn't be over here. Nobody should know where I'm at. How do you know where I'm at?
In fact, I've gone out of my way so nobody would know where I was at.
The Guardians, like, don't want me to, like...
I'm supposed to be on a super secret mission.
Like, this is so classified that I'm probably going to get...
In trouble.
Was it delisted?
Yeah.
Or whatever. Kicked out of the core. And, Batman's like, look, we found this thing, it landed on Earth, it looks like a head, we're calling it the Totality. I don't know why.
Yeah, because that's just a
weird name. It's just a random weird name.
Yeah. We're calling it the Conception. They could have come up with 1,000 different oddball names.
But they call it the Totality, and John Stewart's like, yeah, so it's not my problem. And Batman's like,
everybody's
and Batman's
problem.
Like, look, we don't know what's going on with this thing. you know, like there's a hole in the universe, the source wall.
Right, that you all created. Oh, wait, that he created, my bad.
And he's like, look, Killer Croc touched this thing and came back, and he changed. He's like, what do you mean change? And he's like, you start hearing all this fuzzy noise and this noise in the background. He goes, what the heck was that? He goes, that was Killer Croc. Well, Killer Croc comes back, and he's like this huge monster.
He's almost like a small dinosaur.
Yeah. And he says he's basically come back evolved enough to where he might beat us all.
Yeah.
The JLA. And he's like, why don't you get Hal to do it? He's like, look, Hal's trying to fix the source wall so we all don't die. We need your butt back here. Well, while he does that, there's this light that shows up, and Sinestro comes out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Sinestro tells John Stewart, he's like, look, I went back to the original color the original colors I used to wield.
Yeah,
after I was out of the Green Lantern
Corps. I thought it was odd seeing Sinestro show up in the purple outfit.
And which, like, I was like, ooh, Super Friends.
Yeah.
Like, he's back to that old...
This book feels a whole lot like the Justice book that Alex Ross did. It, to some degree, it feels a lot like that, because it had Legion of Doom with the Legion of Doom ship and everything in it.
But the cool thing is, it's like, he goes, I'm here to recruit you. And you're like, what do you mean recruit? And he tells them that they're going back to this ultraviolet core.
Mm-hmm. The hidden light spectrum, yeah, that we've never seen.
Yeah, which is kind of really cool. But
because the DC Universe didn't have enough lantern cores. Right.
I mean, you can complain, but
I'm not complaining. It just...
No, I'm saying it's a pretty cool concept, though. I mean, literally, it's kind of a cool concept. Well, the thing is, like, they show up on Earth, and, like, it's kind of funny because, like, the only two people that can go to this totality thing is Superman and Martian Manhunter, because it has some sort of defenses built into it.
Right, they're the only persons whose bodies can hold up when they go. The
mass or whatever. Yeah. But the funny thing is, they sneak in, like, some other JLA members, and how they do this is they shrink them down.
Right. So they're in the bloodstream, yeah, kind of like inner space.
Because Batman is talking to Hawkgirl, and he's like, look, we need you to do this. And she's like, what are you talking about? And, like, he's like, look, me and the Atom developed these, like, little ships. And, like, I'm in Superman right now. Yeah. And Superman goes, well, that's a phrase you'll never, ever hear again. And that's kind of what I like about this book, too. It's got a sense of humor. Because, mm-hmm, like, in the first issue, like, where they were fighting that one thing,
mm-hmm,
and they were all using Batman's voice, like, even Diana got into it, and she goes, because I'm the blank Batman, like that. And, like, they were like, oh, my God, Wonder Woman, that is so him. You know? Well, the funny thing is, it's like, she's like, ooh, I don't want to be in another man's body like that. So, but it's funny because, like, she gets put into Martian Manhunter's body,
mm-hmm,
and Batman is in Superman's body. And there's this other, like, side story with Lex Luthor, and Lex Luthor's talking to the Legion of Doom, and at the end of it, like, Cheetah attacks him, and they find out that he wasn't really there.
Yeah. It was a life model decoy, yeah. Lex Luthor.
Like, they call... Yeah, they say a Lex bot.
Nuggie 99. John Wimmer joined.
But the funny thing is, when I read it, I thought it said Alex bot. I was like, Alex bot? What? I read it wrong. But it's a Lex bot. And it turns out that, like, Lex Luthor is somewhere else, too. And it turns out that Lex Luthor is also in Superman's body.
Yeah, shrunken down. Which I didn't know he had size-altering technology, but guess he does.
Oh, and near the end of the issue, John Stewart comes back, and he's fully taken over by this ultraviolet core.
Yeah, he's the first lantern in the ultraviolet core. He
goes, I'm the leader,
right,
of the ultraviolet core.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird, because I was like...
So he's mind controlled at this
point. Yeah, because he's got like these weird like tattoo things going on him.
Brainwashed. I started to say mind-washed. I'm like, that's not right. Yeah. He's brainwashed.
Yeah, we all got the point.
Though. Yeah.
But so, what I'm saying is...
This book is very high concept.
It is.
And I've always... And I said this back when we were reading the No Justice. It's like Scott Snyder's doing his best Grant Morrison. He's really reaching for Grant Morrison territory here. It's all right. I just hope he can hang on.
I don't think he's... Which Grant Morrison, though?
I'm talking about JLA Grant
Morrison. Are we talking Final Crisis Grant Morrison? No.
Final Crisis Grant Morrison is crazy Grant Morrison. Okay?
That's bad Grant Morrison.
That's Grant, bad Grant. I'm talking about just...
JLA
Grant Morrison.
Well...
But like I said, if you're not careful, it's a slippery slope. You can find yourself in Final Crisis territory if you're not careful. All right. Cool. All right, that brings us to the last book we want to talk about this week. As soon as I find it on my device, my electronic device here. Da-da. And it is Hawkman number one. You know, this book's been getting a lot of publicity for the last however many issues.
I read it.
And for the last however many weeks, I should say, before it's coming out. I mean, you know, Hawkman was a big part of the... the DC Metal storyline with Batman and everything.
Yeah, there was the Hawk creature that was just in the New Challengers book.
Right, and so there was a search for Hawkman during that whole time, and Carter Hall was missing and so forth. So this issue, we kind of get sort of a history on who Carter Hall really is. Because Carter Hall, man, is the DC lore on this guy is convoluted.
Every time they introduce a new, like, history or something, right. It's like, there's a guy named Cater.
Every time that they want to do or tweak this character a little bit, instead of changing his established parameter...
They add more backstory.
They just say, well, though this is a new character, it has to have the same name. And it's weird. So, you know, we take Carter Hall, who was like an Indiana Jones-style archaeologist dude, and we say, no, we don't want him to be that. We want him to be a Thanagarian warrior from another planet. Yeah. Well, then let's just act like this other guy didn't exist. And now Carter Hall is Katar Hall from Thanagar. Well, is he one or is he the other? Well, we'll have several issues where we don't know. Several issues where we can't decide. Several issues where we think we're one way. Several issues where we think... And we'll finally settle on one or the other.
And then he was Prince Khufu or whatever.
Well, and so we've always known that Carter Hall was reincarnated over time.
Yeah.
Right, so he lived several lives, and the thing that goes on between him and Shaira is that they are destined to refind each other over and over and over again, and as they both die and are reborn. What we learn in this is that not only is Carter Hall reincarnated over time, but he's also reincarnated across space. So the idea is whether or not we had this huge battle that existed between the fans of which was cooler. Was it Carter Hall or was it Katar Hall, the winged Thanagarian warrior? And which one was the real Hawkman? Turns out they both were. This is DC's solution.
Everyone was Hawkman.
All of the above. You know, A, B, C, D, all of the above. All of the above is the right answer.
You know those guys that were on Krypton flying around with hawk wings?
Mm-hmm.
That was him, too.
Yeah, so he was apparently a Kryptonian at one point in the past life. He was a Thanagarian. He was all kinds of different people across different spaces and different realities and different time periods.
Which I kind of think is kind of cool.
It's interesting. It's, you know, it's a different way to look at the character than had previously been looked at before.
And I was kind of worried about picking that book up because of Venditti writing it.
Because
I dropped off Green Lantern so long ago when he was writing it. But this issue actually kind of felt kind of fun because he's like trying to like do some archaeology.
Right. In the beginning. So there's a very Nathan Drake Uncharted like,
quality
to it, where he's got to go in and get an artifact and get out before the place collapses around him while a giant monster's chasing him. And so whether you're talking about, you know, Lara Croft, Nathan Drake, or Indiana Jones, they've all got that same quality to them. Not only do you have somebody going into temples to find secret treasure, but when they find it, there's some kind of horrible thing that's about to kill them that they've got to get away from, whether it's a rolling rock or whatever.
It's kind of rough for us.
And so it just was, this issue was just a lot of fun to watch him deal with that. And you know, he's no amateur. I mean, he had to go underwater, he had to fly, he had to go through tight spaces, all while this giant gorilla thing is chasing him and asking him to return the Nautilus. Now, this Nautilus thing, which looks like a giant seashell,
that's what Nautilus means, I think.
Right. I started to say conch, but that I don't know if that's the right word. But
well, if it's like a conch shell, it's the roundish one. Well, if it's just like the palm-shaped one.
Yeah, I think it's the one that's in like a spiral pattern.
Yeah, that's conch shell.
Right. So he's got to get this, and he's hopefully this thing apparently has the power to reveal his true self or something to that effect. So he takes it to Madame Xanadu, which I thought was cool, because Madame Xanadu is a character that I kind of like. I remember when that Vertigo series was hers was coming out, and I collected that in trade and never read it. I was always kind of ticked that I never got around to that. It's on my bookshelf, and I've been meaning to forever. But she basically casts a spell where she cuts his palm and causes him to bleed on the shell, and that's when he gets the revelation about all these lives and who he really is. And then he gets a prophetic vision for the future about the world in chaos, destroyed, torn to ashes, and somehow or another he's involved and has got to try and stop it, and he doesn't know how or what to do next. And so that's kind of where the issue ends.
Yep.
So it was good. It was fun. I'm excited to see where it goes. I'll probably stay on this for the next little bit and see if it holds up. So the art was good. Who wrote this? I forget.
Venditti.
Robert Venditti?
Venditti, yes.
And who was the artist? Do you remember? I'm trying to give credit to...
It's Hitch. Brian Hitch.
Oh, Brian Hitch. Yeah. I never have been the biggest Brian Hitch fan.
Sometimes he's okay, and then sometimes he can really...
Well, like I said, these sprawling action scenes are pretty well done. But like the scene with Madame Xanadu at the end is serviceable at best. I mean, it just is kind of like he's phoning it in here. It's not great at all. So, you know, that's just me. I've never been the biggest Brian Hitch fan, but it's fine. So...
It works.
All right, so that's our issues for this week. We're going to...
that's our issues.
Well, we've got other issues besides that, but we won't talk about those. We'll wait till we're stretched out on the couch with a psychologist for that. In the meantime, Charlie and I are going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Alternate Reality bringing you the best in comic book podcasting every week of the year. Hold tight. We'll be right back.
Were you masturbating?
Judy.
No, Mom!
Zip it, okay?
No, I don't masturbate.
That's not something for you to bring up. That's a father and son thing.
You don't have to call it that word. If that makes you uncomfortable, you can call it Sam's happy time or
happy
my
time.
Special Mom, alone
stop.
Time.
Mom,
with
Judy,
myself.
Stop. Mom,
I'm sorry. It's just been a weird night. I've had a little bit to drink.
No, Dad.
Alden Reality, the comic book podcast. We're back now to kind of close the show out. But before we do that, Charlie wanted to talk about his experience last week at Heroes Con in Charlotte, North Carolina, down there, the home of barbecue and fine women close to the beach. How did things go down there, Charlie?
Yeah, I like Charlotte.
It's a good city, as long as you don't get lost in the ghetto.
Which I made a joke about that the other day. It was kind of funny. I made it to Nuggie. The thing is, I wanted to go to Charlotte, and like I thought everyone was going to be down there. And I was like, yay, I'm going to go to Charlotte, and maybe John will come down, maybe.
I wanted to. I really did.
And I said, Nuggie's going to be there. Chris is going to be there. I said, it'd be a good time. Mm-hmm. And I've been working at the shop to like make some money for it, and it was all cool. So it's like I leave Friday, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like I ran into like three things of traffic, right? And they were all caused by cops.
Cops
like,
calls
slows down like every time, except for in there's that turnaround in North Carolina where you go from the highway and you gotta get on that other highway to go south.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 46A.
Right.
Barton probably knows where it's at, but like it's always like if you don't get in that right lane, then you're never gonna get into that lane anyway. It's not like a 2-lane turn off or whatever.
Right.
But I made it to Heroes. I was down there at like 5:30 on Friday, and I parked at the Hall of Fame, the NASCAR Hall of Fame.
Okay.
I was like, oh, this is cool. I can park here all weekend, probably. I didn't know. I was like, hopefully they won't tow my car.
And oh my God, did you get towed?
No, I didn't get towed. Oh, okay. But I looked at the signage and it said, parking every day is $20. But if you come in after 5 o'clock on one day, it starts on the next day's thing. Mm-hmm. So I was like, cool, I'll get out of here and I only have to pay like $30 or $40 parking. That's awesome. Turned out I had to pay $56.
Jeez.
But, I went down there for like I said, Chris and John, and I thought everyone was going to be there. And all of our friends were there. Like, Alan was down there. Mm-hmm. New Mutants.
Right.
In the forums. Sean Pryor was there.
Isn't it funny we still refer to people by their comic book forum names from the comic book forums?
Pants and Murd were there. A bunch of other artists and everything. And, Friday, I got there pretty late, and I met John Wimmer, and I had already ate at Taco Bell, which is kind of funny in a story in itself, but because like we went out to eat later on, and he's like, well, where do you want to eat? And John's like, well, let's go to this Red Eye Diner. And it's like this place that looks like a fast food place from the 50s or whatever.
Right.
And they got all these like fake gold records on the wall and everything and all these other things. And it's like, I order a banana split. Because I already ate. Yeah. And Wimmer, Nuggie, he orders Brenner. He eats breakfast for dinner. Uh-huh. I mean, they bring him a plate and it's like eggs, gravy, and like biscuits. I was like, what? You eating that seriously at this 50s diner? But it was all cool. The next day, Parton shows up, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's funny because I recognized...
He recognized him right off.
No, I recognized his son.
Oh, okay.
After have only seen him like twice before, I think.
Right.
And I was like, oh, because me and Nuggie were
Camden eating... Camden in his name?
Yeah. Me and Nuggie were eating breakfast on top there we had gotten from Bojangles.
Right. That's Parton's favorite place to eat.
And I was like, oh, my God, there's Chris Parton's son. And then I see, like, Chris, like, walking, like, a foot behind. I was like, hey, there's Chris Parton. So we go in, and we're looking around and everything. And Chris is, like, Chris, God love the man, stops at almost every indie artist guy. He's like, hey, man, nice book, awesome, great. Goes to, like, 4 or 5 people he knows. I swear if the man had $1 million, he'd just go, here you go.
Make it rain.
Here's 20. Here's 30. He's 40. The best part was we went up to this one table and like Chris just turned around and he's like, hey, this looks like a cool book. And he starts talking to the guy who's there. He's like, yeah, how much is the book? He's like, oh, it's 20 or whatever. Chris like, the art looks good. And he just gives him the money right away. He didn't even...
Then ask him what it's about.
Yeah, he looks at it, he flips through it like a couple pages, he buys it right off. And he goes, and what do you do on the book? And the guy's like, I'm the artist. And it was great because he totally looked like Ferris Bueller, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think John will have to, Nuggie will have to correct me if I'm wrong, because I was like, wow, isn't it nice that Chris bought that book from Ferris Bueller? And it was crazy because, like I said, we walked.
So it looked like Matthew Broderick.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool.
It was funny because, like, we walked around the con for, like, hours and, like, Chris was wanting to look for, like, some deals or whatever. And I told you earlier that I was, like, telling him about Descender.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually bought, like, 5 issues for him.
While you were at the show.
Yeah. And he's like, what'd you do this? I already have the PDF. So I was like, what? You dirty rotten.
So Charlie is like, hey, Parton really wants to read that. I've got to run around and find these issues. So he's scampering around trying to find the issues. What'd you pay for them?
$10 for 5 of them.
For all of them together?
Yeah.
Okay, so he pays.
But it's like 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6.
Right, so you missed like 3.
Yeah, like that. Issue 3.
And so he says, well, you know, this will have to be good enough.
I was like, here.
Here, partner. Because you're my friend. I want you to have these. And he was like, I already got all this on digital form. Charlie was like, oh!
Well, he did give me, like, the $10 back, which I thought was kind of cool. But he really didn't have to do that. But I was just like, I wanted to do that for him. But we ate at Mertz.
So somehow or another, Parton's still getting a bunch of free issues of comics delivered to him on a regular basis. Whether they be digital or print.
We ate at Mertz, which I love Mertz. Mertz is probably
one of my favorite. Yeah, that's one of the best reasons to go down there, really.
Like, I had the sweet rolls, which I always get.
Oh, my gosh.
And I mean, their cornbread is probably the best cornbread I've ever had in my entire life. And it's
probably made with lard.
I'm throwing the gauntlet down. So if you can make better cornbread than that, send it to me. I'll judge.
Or tell me where it can be found.
But we ate there, and Chris left. And what I wanted to talk about is on Sunday.
Right.
And not to demean Chris or anything, but Sunday is the place to be at the con for heroes.
Right.
On Sunday.
That's where the deals are had.
Because what happens is on Sunday, on Saturday night, they have the charity art auction.
Right.
And I think Nuggy said that Tony Harris paid like $14,000 for an original Bill Watterson sketch.
Dang.
You know, the guy who did Calvin and Hobbes.
Right.
And it was for a disease. Like, that's what they did the charity for this year. And it's because Tony Harris's, someone in his family had the same disease.
Okay.
So he bought this thing. And I never saw it, but I'm glad that he did that. But, like, on Sunday, whatever doesn't sell the night before, they do the art auction.
Right.
And they get all the stuff that hasn't paid. And, like, it's all sit out there, and like they have a mini auction on Sunday. It lasts for like 3 or 4 hours.
Try and move those last pieces.
Yeah, because I think it all like it goes to the to the con and to charity or whatever.
I think Crisp said 11,000. I don't know exactly what he's referring to.
Well, that's probably how much Tony Harris paid.
Oh, for okay.
The thing, I couldn't remember. It was 11 or 14,000, whatever. But you can get some really nice pieces on Sunday if you wait. And like, there were some really cool pieces. There was a few Batman sketches, like some Batman art, which was really Superman art, which was really cool, because there was one where like he's standing there and his cape's in like this big like S shape behind him, and like made like a cityscape behind him. It was kind of cool. And, like, you can get some really cool deals, because, like, this one guy, I think he spent, like, $1,400. And, I mean, he was buying, like, actual, like, two-page spreads from comic books for, like, $500.
Wow.
That were originally for, like, $800 or whatever. And it was, like, Ultimate Avengers 3. You remember the vampire ones? And like this one guy like bought like the cover where Ultimate Daredevil is about to bite Ultimate Captain America on the neck because he's a vampire,
right?
And that was all Ennis and Dylan. Well, it's like I was like, yeah, I don't really have a lot of money. Like I just because I went down on a very small budget, very small, very small. And it's kind of sad because there were some really, really cool things at the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I took a picture of it, and they had the front and back cover of the 1 million omnibus.
Oh, yeah.
Phil Jimenez, like $1,250
for
both of it. And I first looked at it, I was like, I couldn't see the two. I was like, $250 for this? This is a steal. Who can I kill to get this, you know? And I was like, dang, if I had the money. But no, and then I saw the one, I was like, oh, $1,250. But $1,250 for that cover right there is really, really cool to have.
Right.
But, like, I saw some things, and, like, I bought this this Magneto sketch.
Oh, that's cool.
It's the proportions aren't real great because it was just from one of the congoers.
Yeah, this one hand is a little off, but still.
And I bought it for $10. I think that's not bad for $10. It's kind of funny because, like, after I bought it, the kid who actually made it actually walked by me, and he's like, "Oh, can I take a picture of that? Because I drew that, and I didn't take a picture of it." I was like, "Okay, I guess I don't care. It's you bought it." I mean, I was actually thinking about probably going to give it back to the comp, but I was like, "Nah, I'll probably keep it."
Yeah.
And then I saw this other thing I wanted, and I was like, I don't know how much I want to pay for that, because I didn't know what it was really when I first saw it, and I thought it was kind of cool, but it's a Dynamic Forces cover to Action 1000, and it's the Dan Jurgens.
Oh, sweet.
Other cover.
Oh, the black and white version.
And it's a wraparound.
Yeah.
So you can take it out of there and look at it.
Well, I hate to break this.
I already did it.
Oh, okay.
It's not a break anyway. It's just...
I hate to peel it up because you feel like it's sealed for authenticity.
It is, but it's got the little sketch thing. But I bought that and I was like, oh, $45. That's not bad. I mean, you probably go on eBay right now.
Right.
And you see it's a two-page front and back.
Right, it's a double wraparound.
And all the
Superman. I don't want to crease it, but...
But I bought that, and
so it's got Golden Age soups, and you got like Silver Age soups, two versions of them. Then you got like the John Byrne soups, the black suited soups from the Death and Return of Superman. Then you got the New 52 and the modern one. So
well, yeah, I thought it was cool. I said the only real Superman it didn't have was Electric Blue.
Yeah,
I said that would have made it just that much cooler.
Well, and the Max Fleischer one, that would have been cool too. Although technically that's not a comic book version of Superman.
But anyway, I bought that. Well, I didn't buy it for myself, actually.
Well, who'd you buy it for?
You.
Charlie! Oh, that's really cool.
I mean, yeah, I could probably have bought it for eBay less than that, but I was like $45. I was there.
Dude, you suck. And I mean that in the best possible way. Because now I feel like, oh, I didn't get you anything. Of course, I didn't go to the show, but...
And I know, like...
You're on the internet.
Oh, God.
But, like, I knew, like, how much of a Jurgens fan you were. And
yes. Oh, my God.
I would like to have had the colorized version, but that one was a...
No, that is super cool, man.
Now you know why I wanted to do this, don't you?
Charlie's like, what? No show? This sucks.
Yeah, I was going to do it last week, and then I was kind of like, I was going to lord it over you.
Charlie was like, I swear to God, if he cancels all the round again, I'm not giving it to him.
Yeah, pretty much. But that was HeroesCon. I had a great time. Nuggie left me early that day.
He did. He had to go home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't leave till like 4, I think, and I didn't get home till like 10.
So,
but it's always a
good time.
It's always a great con.
Oh, I've been twice or three times, but it's I always had a good time. All right, let's wrap the show up real quick. All New Reality Podcast is available on the web. You can catch us at our website, arnetcast.podomatic.com. Hopefully the site's working a little better than it was a couple weeks ago when I posted the last episode. They were having problems. People couldn't get it downloaded and stuff. They could see it. They could try to click on it, but nothing would happen.
I can see it. It's a mirage.
So hopefully they got their kinks worked out.
It's a mirage.
By the time you hear this, when everything's working better. We want you to send us some email. Email's at aldenrealitypodcast@gmail.com. I didn't even check to see if we had any email. My bad. I'll have to save it for next week. Go over to iTunes if you would and say nice things about us. I keep meaning to go ahead and try to get us posted on the Google Play Store and other places so people can see us in more locations, but I've been lazy. I apologize. Just haven't done it. But we are, so if you go over and search for us on iTunes, you can find us. And if you would rate and review us with high marks, that would be really good. 5 stars, nothing less than 5 stars. And and say something sweet about us in the review section.
We're the best podcast ever. 5 stars.
We have the best reviews.
There's no one better.
Everybody says it. Everybody agrees. Bigly. Bigly. So do that. That we would appreciate that. You can catch us on the interwebs at our various hangouts. We're going to try to start maybe doing this broadcast live each week. Just, you know, if it works out and people start coming in, then that would be cool. We would like to generate a little more traffic over on the website, over on the Facebook page. So if this will draw people over there, that might be awesome. Or we may try to do it through YouTube. I haven't decided. We'll work it out. We'll figure it out. But you can catch us at our various online haunts. Twitter.com is where me and Charlie are at most of the time. Twitter.com/John Loveless for me, /XOnslaught for Charlie, or @John Loveless @XOnslaught. And the show itself has its own Twitter feed at @AR_podcast. We've got Facebook pages. You just have to search for us over there. Alternate Reality also has a page.
Don't be lazy.
Just search for us. You can find us.
We're not that hard to miss.
And Alternate Reality is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. You can check out the network over at Comics with an S, Podcast with an S, double plural, comicspodcasts.com. And that's pretty much it. Anything to add to that, Charlie?
No.
All right. Alternate Reality bringing you the very best in comic book related internet content each week, maintaining an excellent tradition in internet broadcasting for however many years.
I thought you were going to say quitting and starting.
Well, we're good at that. So,
didn't we quit and start like twice a year?
Maybe. Possible. So, you know, it goes for however long it goes. That's all I can say. So that's it for this time. Until next time, in the meantime, my name is John.
And I'm Charlie.
You guys have a good week. We'll see you next time. And we might talk about Luke Cage next time.
Welcome to Alternate Reality, episode 390, reviews and more. Yes. No, Jeff Holden.
Oh, is that who that was?
Yes. Yes, it's me.
Yes, yes. Jeff Goldblum here. Going to do your comic book reviews.
Versus X-Men, yes. No, Superman.
Superman flies. He flies. Not unlike The Fly, which was a movie that I was in.
An interesting story about that movie. We all had coffee at this one little bistro in New York. It was awesome.
It was great. They served pistachios with the coffee for free. All right.
I want Jeff Goldblum to just like come in.
Yes. Jeff Goldblum will be on your podcast for a substantial payday.
What is a podcast now?
So it's like all your little internet friends get together and they talk. And other people can listen. That's so fun. That's really fun. Everybody wins.
Like, did you see like him reviewing tattoos on Instagram of himself?
I did. Yes.
He's like, well, I don't know why all these people would have pictures of me on that.
I remember when this picture was taken. And then the other one would be like, I've never seen that before.
That was awesome.